You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right-end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your hosts, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Bison Report Radio. I am your host, Ross Uglum. Most of you would be expecting Ryan Burns to be co-hosting with me, and you'll see plenty of Ryan, or you'll hear plenty of Ryan, rather, this year. But as most of you know, I am now the publisher of Bison Report. I'm kind of the head honcho in charge. Ryan has moved on now to focus more full-time on his work covering the Minnesota Gophers. They've done such a tremendous job building that site that he needed more of a full-time focus over there, and I was more than happy to make Bison Report kind of my baby. And we've assembled such an awesome team. You're going to get to hear from two of them today, Trevor Gebhardt and Nate Zastrow, both guys that played their respective sports at North Dakota State, providing you guys, the Bison fans, with real insider look, guys that have played in these systems, that have played and understand a lot of these coaches, and really I think are going to help you as a Bison fan understand more of kind of what it takes to be a part of the program and really give an insider's look into what's going on. There's a few things with my discussion with Trevor where we know what's up. We all know that this morning Matt Entz named Trey Lance a starter. I think that was pretty well known. If you follow what's going on at the Bison Report, You knew that Lance was probably going to be the guy, and he is going to be the guy. The backup's going to be Zeb Noland, which is just a tremendous position to be in, frankly, to have a number two quarterback with the abilities that Zeb has, with the experience that Zeb has in big spots. And I think this is just basically what was expected at the quarterback position moving forward. I think Lance offers a pretty seamless transition. I just see Trey as the next evolution of Carson Wentz and Easton Stick. He's going to be just as athletic. He's definitely going to be able to throw the ball, I think, better than people are anticipating, especially early. I think most people see the two runs from last season and just assume that he's a running quarterback, and he really throws a beautiful ball. I've had a chance to be at a couple of practices. You've seen that tweet that I shared from Beth Houle with some awesome footage from the folks over at Valley News Live. He's got a very live arm, throws a tight spiral. It's going to be good in inclement weather, not that there's a ton of that in the Valley, especially with most of NDSU's games, for better or for worse, being played at the Fargo Dome, whether it's non-conference, conference, or playoff games. But he's just a special, special talent, and somebody that's going to be on display for four full seasons. The way, if he stays healthy, he's going to start more games than Stick. He's going to start more games than Brock Jensen if he stays healthy moving forward. So I think it's a very exciting time to be a Bison fan, and I, for one, can't wait to watch Trey just go to work against a team in Butler that is probably not going to provide a lot of resistance. It's going to be sort of a preseason game, a little bit of a warm-up. Bison right now, 5x48.5-point favorites, which is just absolutely bonkers. But that's something I think that's really going to allow for a smooth transition for Lance into that role. North Dakota State has some really young receiving talent, and that's something that I get into a little bit with Trevor. So without further ado, let's cut to that interview. It's myself and new NDSU, new Bison Report lead football analyst, Trevor Gebhardt. Here now with Bison Report's lead analyst for football, Trevor Gebhardt. Trevor, this is your debut on the show. A lot of Bison fans know who you are already, but we have some younger listeners who might not quite remember your vintage. Kind of explain who, what years you played, some of the guys you played with, how you and I kind of got to know each other. Let the people know a little bit about Trevor Gebhardt.
Right, so really to kind of put it in a nutshell, first landed in Fargo in 2010 by way of Sioux Falls, Washington. obviously got recruited to come up to play some ball for the Bison. So it just seemed like a good fit, felt like family, and seemed like the culture I wanted to be a part of, which, as most people know that are probably listening to this, that kind of worked out. So I played from 11 to 14. We won a heck of a lot more than we lost. I gained a lot of best friends in the process. And throughout those years, you and I interacted, hit it off, became good friends, and here we are doing a podcast. So that's kind of that in a nutshell, but really appreciative of you having me on and let me join the team.
Yeah, we're sure excited with this expansion to have you come on and give us a little, give us a little insight into some of the X's and O's and a little insight into the culture. Certainly not, we don't want you to give away any trade secrets, but I'm sure we'll be able to navigate those waters just fine. I think it's got to be, and you would know better than I would, it has to be since Brock kind of officially put the Jose Moeller thing to bed, since North Dakota State has had a legitimate QB battle. Do you remember anything about that time when it became clear that number 16 was going to be the quarterback moving forward?
Not vividly, but I do remember that 2010 season when I was redshirting, you could see Brock progress really quick. So Jose started that year at Kansas, which a few of us actually drove down to that game. And which we of course won 6-3, the offense just did not click, to the level that we thought it could. And so Brock kind of started working his way into the lineup. Jose got hurt. I don't recall how early, which allowed Brock to kind of take the reins. And I guess you could really say the rest is history. Now, the good thing is, Jose had a good amount of experience where when Brock got hurt at Montana State, and actually I think didn't Brock break his collarbone that year too?
Yeah, it was very difficult to keep quarterbacks healthy that season, that is for sure.
Right. So, I mean, you know, we had a two-platoon system, I guess, by way of injury that year, but no knock to Jose because I love the dude dearly, and I like what he's doing with his current Left Coast Athletics thing, but Brock was just probably a better quarterback and a better fit for our system. And I guess the results speak for themselves. The results speak for themselves, I guess, in the years following. So Brock kind of came into his own and he got more comfortable once he got a few wins under his belt. And then, you know, obviously it catapulted us into a national championship year the following season. And then the next 2 years turned out pretty good too. So to kind of go back to your question, I guess you kind of knew Brock had it in him. It just took a little bit of time, and it started in 2010.
So what do you think is going through everybody's mind now with sort of an open competition, but one that I think has a presumed favorite, somebody that redshirted last year, has an opportunity to start for 4 years, but the other kid, you know, he's got credentials. You throw for over 300 yards against a college football playoff qualifier, and it's well documented that Oklahoma doesn't play very good defense, but it's still the University of Oklahoma. You know, it's still I think impressive, and at the same time, boy, you will be hard pressed to find somebody that believes that Zeb truly has a shot at this thing.
Yeah, I mean, so it's kind of interesting because I really think that where Trey Lance benefited the most was the new redshirt rule where they could play four games without burning a redshirt. Because anytime he had the ball in his hands, he was a threat. And you could see that from the first snap he took. I don't recall which game. I think it was early in the season. But that kid showed signs of extreme promise. He's kind of his own, which I really like. I mean, I don't want to say, oh, he's more Easton than he is Carson. You know, he's Trey Lance. He's his own style of player. And if I had to actually compare him to anybody, he'd be closest to Taron Christian. And in my opinion, probably even faster. So it's not bad to have that in your arsenal. And it's also not bad to have a backup and a kid in Zeb Nolan, like you mentioned, that has torched Oklahoma And like we saw and just mentioned in 2010, having that as in your back hip is nothing but a plus. So if something goes wrong, knock on wood, you have someone that can step in no problem and has been in big pressure situations and perform. And you could even utilize both of them at some point in the season. You know, you might see a look against a certain team, a certain defense that fits a different quarterback. And if you roll with him for a certain series because you notice a breakdown in a certain coverage that he can hit a spot better, by all means, go for it. And that's the beauty of playing in Fargo for the Bison is, by and large, the kids that are on the field believe that the team is bigger than themselves. So if they see someone excelling in their position group, they're not pouting because they're not the star. They want the team to win before they get the name. So, I think the coaching staff wouldn't bring in a transfer without vetting that thoroughly. So I'm very confident in both kids, really. But like you mentioned, I do think if you had to give the nod to somebody based off the age, what he did last year, I think you probably would give a slight edge to Trey at this point.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I think one of the potential storylines that maybe not everybody is aware of or paying attention to, and something that might come up if Jabari Gibbs struggles, is the simple fact that South Dakota State wanted Zeb to be their starting quarterback, and Zeb wanted to be a Bison. And even if he doesn't win that battle, if he ends up being a significantly better player than Jabari Gibbs, just the fact that he's not on South Dakota State's roster becomes a huge plus for NDSU and the rest of the Valley.
Well, what it comes down to, you're exactly right, but to me, here's what it comes down to, and it's, because it's a process I've been through and it's what I've heard time and time again. The coaches in Fargo, they're going to be honest with you and they're just going to tell you straight up where you stand and where they see you fit in the plan and the system. So I don't think in those conversations when Zeb was in the transfer portal, by any means were the coaches saying, "Hey Zeb, you can come here. You're going to start right away because SDSU told you that." That's not how they roll. And that's why the culture works. And that's why you're able to see results. And that's why kids have the viewpoint of this is something bigger than me, because that's all out on the table. And everybody knows they're playing from the guy next to them, as opposed to themselves. And that's not to say that's exactly what they do in Brookings. But there are instances where you do notice a difference in the culture. And I thoroughly believe that is why the results speak for themselves, is because of that.
Tailback's an interesting story. I think any school would really struggle or definitely miss two guys, the talent level and the production of Bruce Anderson and Lance Dunn. And then you kind of have what I would have considered to be the feature back or the next man up, Seth Wilson. Well, he blows out his ACL in spring ball. Everybody knows what Ty Brooks brings to the table, but he's like 5'9 and 180 pounds. He's better touching the ball 12, 14, 16 times a game than he is toting the rock 45 times like he's Rod Malone. Who do you think fits best as kind of that feature back, that Sam Ojeri mold, the guy that's going to run A-gap power on third and one, the guy you give the ball to? Who do you think fits there between this stable of backs that they have now without Seth Wilson being available and with Bruce in Tampa Bay and Lance having moved on as well?
Well, I got two names that come to mind simply because of their size. But you have Adam Cofield. I think he's a solid back. He comes from Lee's Summit, Missouri, which is where a kid by the name of King Frazier came from. He's from Lee's Summit. Then he went to Blue Springs, which I believe Darius came from. So he comes from a good football pedigree or background. Then you also have Sabian Clark, who I think will be a phenomenal athlete for the Bison. But, I haven't seen enough on either one to be like, okay, this is our guy versus the other one, and going to be able to tote the rock a few more times per game, especially in a short yard situation. Rather, or like a red zone goal line type deal. But I think just the size alone will offer those two reps early.
Yeah, both guys, in my opinion, have just shown being really solid so far. Very few flashes, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, and nor am I, you know, saying that they aren't good players because of that. I just, from what I've seen right now, they understand what their responsibilities are on every play. They maximize the number of the yards that they get. They're just not hitting home runs, and they're not hitting home runs yet. I'm not at all saying that they're not capable of it. The next place I want to go to kind of on the roster here is your area of expertise, because this is a wide receiver room that is not going to have a senior in it, not a scholarship senior anyway, this year or next year. And so Matt Entz has made it very clear that Braylon Henderson and DJ Baptist from the Frisco area, two guys that they got in the late signing period, are likely to lose those red shirts and play throughout the year. They will go, in addition to Phoenix Sproles, who also lost his redshirt last year, and Christian Watson, who's now a redshirt sophomore. Beyond that, it's walk-on guys like Jimmy Kaporis and Cole Jacob that have kind of made their names known and sort of forced themselves onto the two deep. But what do these freshmen have in front of them? I mean, how difficult do you think it would be for a true freshman to pick up on the nuances of the offense and be relied upon week in and week out if that's what needs to happen? Because it sure sounds like that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, I think, I mean, as far as the playbook goes, I mean, I think it's kind of a loaded question, because number one, you got to take in account the kid's ability to grasp the playbook. Some kids just get it. And other kids, it might take them a year and maybe a spring ball or two to where it fully clicks. So that I don't know. I've never had a chance to interact with either of those individuals to talk X's and O's. But I would imagine if they're already talking, pulling their red shirt, they've been able to grasp enough of it to where they feel comfortable putting them out there for a third and long, or, you know, a second four, and you're trying to get the D line running from side to side, so you can gouge them with power later. But it's definitely a deal when you have a young group like that. It's reminiscent for me to 2011. We had a very young room outside of Warren Holloway, and Ryan Smith was still a running back at that point. So, you know, he was able to do a few things that season after he converted. And then you had Zach and myself, who battled injuries that year. So really the biggest thing when you have young guys like that getting a lot of reps, that's number one, staying healthy. I think that's probably going to be the most important thing. So it's learning how to take care of your body and learning how to battle those week-to-week grinding Missouri Valley, just beating you up. When you go through the gauntlet of playing 3 to 4 ranked teams in a row is tough. And, you know, physically is one thing, but how do you bounce back from it mentally? Because you're gonna play hurt, and you might incur an injury or two. So I have full confidence in them, because when the coaching staff is out recruiting these kids, they're taking into account their the personality too. So they want kids that they know that can be resilient like that, because they know that a lot's gonna be put on their shoulders. So that way, when you get into situations where you have a young group, and you're relying on even young guys to lead the group, you have resilient kids, so you know that they're going to answer the bell.
Let's talk about the tight end group a little bit. Young guys like Noah Gindorf, who turned down the Gophers to come and play at North Dakota State, and Josh Babich, a big 6'6 target, maybe not as well recruited, but sort of has that Jabril Cox hype train behind him. From the coaching staff, somebody that they can't keep his name out of their mouths. They're that excited about what he has the potential to bring to the table. Even talking about maybe using him at the X receiver position a little bit if they want to create a size mismatch with a smaller cornerback. And then you've got Baby Gronk, Ben Ellison, who is just as complete a tight end as I think you're going to find in an absolute red zone machine. Just how many duties do these guys have on game day, and how valuable is it to have guys that have spent 3, 4, 5 years in the program as crew chiefs?
Yeah, so going to Mr. Old Red Zone Reliable, Ben Ellison. Having a fifth-year guy lead a group, anytime you can have that, you're in great hands, and especially when you have the type of production that he has shown. Last year, catching 75 touchdowns. So anytime you have that, he can always teach the younger guys that haven't had as many reps how to approach practice day-to-day, how to approach recovery time, how to approach the weight room, especially for this group, because there is so much thrown on this group's shoulders that I don't think people realize it because of how well they've been for a decade. These guys are the reason that power works, believe it or not. And then they're also the reason that the passing game can be so multidimensional. And then they're the reason that we can throw to 2 to 3 different receivers every week. We can throw to 2 different tight ends, and you can throw it to a running back or two. Okay, now you got 7 threats that the defense has to actually honor. You know, you got a, you know, a certain guy that comes out and you're like, okay, we have to honor this dude. And anytime we go 12 personnel, okay, well, now you got 2 threats on either side of the field. So having a guy be able to lead a group with a few guys that have a ton of talent, it's truly invaluable. And when you have a 6'6 guy in Babich from Barrington, we've had some good luck with guys from Barrington over the years. Obviously, Ben LeCompton and Sam Ojeri. Then you got another guy who's extremely talented. You got to utilize a 6'6 body. I mean, you know, that's just rare, especially in FCS football. It doesn't come around very often. And then Noah Gindorf being 6'6 as well. So, I mean, this group is exciting. I don't think you're going to see a drop-off by any means. I don't know why you even would. But having that type of depth at that position is huge because, like I said, it's that group. I don't think people truly understand how much is thrown on their shoulders every week.
New offensive line coach, A.J. Blazek, he brings a ton of energy. A lot of folks are really excited about his position group and really excited about his addition as a guy who literally left a Big Ten program in Rutgers and decided to join the Bison. And, I mean, it's obvious, take a massive pay cut to do so, but he believes in what's going on here. And one of the things that he did kind of early on in his tenure was to move Big Zach or Little Zach, I can't even keep track of all the Zachs, but to move Zach Johnson from right tackle into right guard. Zach's excited about it, understands that if he's going to make it at the next level, it's probably going to be at guard. How difficult is that transition for somebody who's put in, you know, 3 seasons of quality work as a tackle to kick inside the guard to make room for kind of a taller basketball player type body like Cordell Volson?
So it's kind of funny you ask me that because I've had a lot of O-line friends throughout my course of playing football. And anytime there's a change of position with them, the way they talk about it and the way they talk about how hard it is always the exact opposite of how they produce. Because anytime I've seen it, they're even better, which is kind of crazy. But, of course, one of the guys I'm referencing is Joe Haig, who seemingly I think has played every position for the Colts on the O-line at this point. But it's a lot more difficult than just going, oh, well, he's just moving one slot down. I mean, it's completely different techniques. You're getting a completely different look. You're dealing with different stunts, and you're dealing with different body types. So when you're used to seeing something for 3-4 years, and now you got to change your view in a football field, that's tough. You know, it'd be like if you had a big receiver and then all of a sudden all they did was play tight end attached. You know, your look is getting changed, but some of the things you're doing conceptually is the same. So all you got to do is just take what you learned from your previous position, try to apply it, and just learn the new techniques that the coaches are teaching you that you haven't practiced as much. So it's just practicing those reps as many times you can get, and just knowing the sheer talent that this 7th Zach Johnson that we've had, it seems like I don't think it'll be an issue for him.
Yeah, former Packers great Josh Sitton, who was a multiple-time All-Pro, he discussed it so eloquently as it's like wiping yourself with a different hand.
That's probably the most complete nutshell way to describe that, but that's exactly right.
When I did the player interviews that we have coming up on BRTV, we've dropped a couple of them. I talked a lot to the defenders about the marriage between pass rush and coverage and just how much some of these young pass rushers, obviously Derek Tusk is, in my opinion, the best defensive end in FCS football. Pretty sure Coach Enns said the exact same thing at his press conference. But other than him, you've got a lot of really young rushers. How much are those pass rushers going to be helped by the fact that Josh Hayes and Marquise Bridges have played so much football and that Destin Talbert's a really talented kid and that quarterback might have to hold on to the ball for an extra half second or might have to move up in the pocket, might have to react a little bit more slowly? And the other side of that coin, how much more dangerous will these defensive backs be if the young defensive linemen pick it up real quick?
I don't even know the exact word I'm looking for. But yeah, that relationship is hand in hand, simply because, I mean, you pretty much covered everything, but anytime that you have a quarterback that can't find anybody open, he's either forced to scramble or throw it away because you can only hang on to the football for so long. So, if you get a few young guys to develop on the defensive line, and they can stay healthy in the back end, you're going to see another phenomenal year from Code Green. So I'm really not too worried about it. Like you said, Derek Tuska, that guy's a force by way of South Dakota. So shouts to him for making the right choice, along with his brother that I was fortunate enough to play with for a couple years. But I'm excited to see what they can do. You got a lot of reps on the back end, which allows some of those younger guys up front to develop. So non-conference will be huge for those young guys up front. And then hopefully they've gotten some quality reps on tape going into Valley play, because once you gain the respect of the Valley, it just gets people on their heels just a little bit on Saturday. So.
You played with some really, really talented guys, dudes that have been defensively, that have made the league, played against other guys that ended up in the pros. I want to ask you, just from having watched as much football, played as much football as you have, how special is Jabril Cox? Because I'll never forget, you know, Christian Dudzik used to live with me, and we had a couple folks over, and one of them was Easton Stick, who's, of course, now with the Chargers. And I asked him kind of how things were going, and his one comment about Jabril Cox was, "I have no idea how this young man ended up at North Dakota State." Anybody ever like that for you in practice, where you just said, how is this kid not playing for Michigan? You know, I mean, that was kind of the level that even during Jabril's freshman year, Easton was just terrified of his just raw ability. What do you think of Jabril, and have you had any experiences like that where, whether it was a underclassman when you were an upperclassman, or just somebody where you were like, good Lord?
Yeah, so pretty much any guy out of Minneapolis. I don't know how the U of M passed on a lot of those, especially guys like Billy Turner, Marcus Williams, Carlton Littlejohn, Grant Olson. I don't know. I'm speechless, to be honest. I don't know how you can miss on guys like that. Zach Verhaal was Mr. Football. And he's in your backyard. So I'm very thankful because I got to benefit from their skill. And now all those guys are some of my best friends. So I'm very thankful and fortunate. But quick story here. So the one kid I do remember that was an underclassman that I first saw, we were running the now famous patterns that Coach Kramer had us do. And these are broken up by time slots, by position group. So the quarterbacks, receivers, and I want to say O-line were all at the same time. So we finish up our deal, and then he encourages us to stick around to help motivate some of the younger guys. And that stuff does go a long way. So what I did is I went down with the linebackers conveniently, because that's where the shade was at. Don't tell Coach Kramer. So, Coach Kramer, if you're listening, I'm sorry. That's why I went down there. I saw this kid jog back, and he was a massive body. And I'm like, who in the world is that? Well, his name was Nick DeLuca. And when I saw that body type, I'm like, that doesn't belong here. And obviously, of course, you know, he's been in the NFL now. So that was the only one. But when it comes to Jabril Cox, what I've seen from him, and you'll see this in my position preview. I actually just wrote it this afternoon. I've played with a lot of very talented guys. I've seen a lot of talented guys in the FCS. I think Jabril Cox is probably the most talented defender I have seen since I've ever paid attention to FCS football, without a doubt. I don't think it's even a contest, and Easton's exactly right. I do not know how he ended up at North Dakota State, but again, like some of my buddies, I'm very thankful because I get to watch him every Saturday, and he, of course, puts on points for the Bison, which one thing I discovered writing about him today, he tied for 9th in points last year on the team. So pretty wild stat there as a defender.
Yeah, that's got to be unprecedented. And I don't know how much you know, kind of experience you have with it. You maybe played a little bit of defensive back in high school, but how much is lost when you lose a guy that's a 4-year starter in the back end like Robbie Grimsley, when he had to have been key in getting guys lined up, the back seven, the linebackers, the corners, the safeties. How much do you lose from a communication perspective and just from a continuity perspective? Because you played a ton of your career against the same two safeties, both friends of ours, Colton and Christian, and it had to be just seamless for those defensive backs to get in and out of coverages, to line up correctly, to pass off patterns. How much gets lost when you lose a veteran like Rob Grimsley?
Well, Rob Grimsley, who I call the forearm bandit, he's a very intelligent football player. And anytime you have that on the back end, that is definitely a huge piece of your puzzle that you have to fill simply from a confidence standpoint. Because when you have a guy like that, he's able to get not only that third layer lined up, he can get that second layer lined up defensively because he can see the whole field, and he can make bad things look good in a hurry. So I think when you have that, it's just a matter of trying to find someone to mimic that. And obviously a guy like Robert Grimsley, it's not easy to replace overnight. So, because even to go even further, anytime you have a guy in the back end that gives you that much confidence, you can go tee off and, get a little bit more aggressive with your blitzes because you know that he's going to be in the right position at the right time. So I think they'll work out those kinks in non-conference, and that's really what it's for. But yeah, it's definitely hard to mimic, and hopefully we just have another guy in this long line of safety history step up.
Yeah, the name seems to be Michael Tutsi. That's the one that the coaches keep kind of going back to and referring to. It was a guy that when he got there as a true freshman, Kleiman could hardly go a press conference without mentioning his name. So I think that Michael Tutsi kid is the next name to watch for. He'll probably, well, I know, I mean, he'll play strong, and James Hendricks will play free. And I really think that this last year of James Hendricks before it kind of gets handed off to the guys that Kleiman recruited to take over, you know, for Jimmy and for Robbie. I think this last year of having James is going to be so important for the back end of that defense before these young guns truly take over in 2020. Trev, thanks so much for doing this. Guys, we're probably going to have Trevor on at least one more time on the pod before the Butler game. And as many of you know, if you've been paying attention to the site, Trev and I are actually going to be live together at Darby's in Minneapolis. It's going to be us kind of teaming up with Bison 1660, and we're going to be at Darby's Pub and Grill, which is downtown. I did the old Google machine, threw it in there. Google Maps says it's a 7-minute walk to Target Field, so less than 10 minutes away, and we're going to be super excited to see all of you out at Darby's and catch kind of a live edition of Bison Report Radio as we team up with 1660 for that coverage. So get there early on Saturday morning because we are starting 6 hours before they kick off at 3 at Target Field. All right, appreciate you, Trev. And I think the other thing that has to be noticed is just how much of a role the NDSU basketball program is on. You look at winning a Summit League championship, followed by winning an NCAA tournament game and having a strong showing, at least in the first half, against Duke. You lose a Dang Gu and a Jordan Horn, both guys that were not receiving tremendous minutes, especially towards the end of the year. Dang was replaced rather seamlessly, or hopefully seamlessly, by Tyler Witts, a JUCO big who's going to provide a little bit more physicality, if maybe not the same level of range that Dang showed, but certainly more physicality for your piles and your bigger Summit League big men. And then you've got the Jordan Horn scholarship opening up the ability to maybe bring in 2020 point guard, which is a huge deal. The development of Jackson Notek on the team's foreign tour to Puerto Rico. I touch on that and a bunch of other topics of NDSU hoops with Bison lead basketball analyst Nate Zastrow. What's up, everybody? Joining me right now is a new addition, I guess, to the Bison Report. I guess as far as the podcast is concerned, we haven't really had a podcast at all since I took over the site. And, you know, we brought on all this incredible talent, including Nate Zastrow. Nate, kind of explain who you are for those of you, maybe our younger listeners that didn't watch you play, and your connection to the basketball program, how you and I know each other, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I'm originally from Manitowoc, Wisconsin. So got recruited by Tim Miles a little bit when he was the head coach. Saul was an assistant, Saul Phillips. Coach Richmond was there, obviously, as well. They started recruiting me early on, and I committed, I think, my junior year of high school and kind of just knew it was the right fit for me. Had a great 4 years there from 2009 to 2013. Got to play for Saul when he became the head coach. Just really enjoyed my time there. I know you. I mean, we're Packer fans. I live about 30 minutes southeast of Green Bay on Lake Michigan, so that's why I got my Packer roots from. We actually met, I think it was through, might be Jeff Rusvang and Reed Dukesher, who was on the football team at the time. I think we met at a Packer game at the old inflatable stadium in Minneapolis. So yeah, that's kind of my background. Like I said, played from 2009 to 2013. Was in the college coaching business after that as a grad assistant at Minot State Division II school, and then moved to Fort Wayne for 4 years, and now I am actually back home selling insurance and helping you guys out, keeping track of the Bison and writing about them. And it's really been a fun ride, even this summer, even them not in season, to be able to just keep track of the team, talk with their coaches, kind of see the new brand of players that they're bringing in and the culture that they continue to have.
Absolutely. We're super excited to have you, obviously. You know, kind of having started your own blog there about mostly, you know, college basketball, covered sports top to bottom, but again, really happy to have you. So let's get right into some of the news. Certainly, there's been tons of it since the last time our listeners heard anything from us, but I want to talk a little bit about the Jordan Horn transfer. Jordan was kind of a bench gunner, a guy that came in, shot the ball a lot, but somebody that when he was recruited to transfer in from Siena, that was kind of a big deal. People got really excited about that, saw the numbers he put up. Siena's in a decent league, saw how many, you know, points he averaged as a true freshman there, then found his way, you know, kind of to the bottom of the rotation unless the Bison were down big, needing a couple buckets. What was your take on Jordan's likelihood of significant playing time this upcoming season, and kind of why maybe he and the coaching staff decided to move on?
You know, I talked with Coach Richmond, I think it was a little bit ago, a couple days, maybe a week ago, and he loved Jordan, loved his work ethic. But when you look at their roster, I mean, Vinny's going to play and Jared's going to start. you got guys like Chris Quayle is going to be thrown in there. Cameron Hunter is going to back up and play minutes. So when you got 80 minutes between that one and two spot, I mean, there just wasn't enough time. And I think Jordan wanted a bigger role. And yeah, he is kind of lightning in a bottle, but he kind of proved, I mean, he was hot and cold a little bit. His shooting percentage wasn't great, but I mean, he had his moments like in the Summit League tournament. I mean, he had a couple big shots and when they really needed it. But I think it was in the best interest for the Bison program and for Jordan to, I think, move on, because I think he did want to play a bigger role, and the minutes that he wanted, just they're not there on this team. And I think it's best for them to move forward. I mean, it opens up a scholarship. They have younger players who I think can plug in, like Jarius Cook, maybe a Tyree Edie. Guys like that can fill in, I think, just fine.
Yeah, it brings two interesting things into play as far as roster construction and recruiting. And what I am kind of thinking about is, number one, this clears the way to get a 2020 point guard, which they desperately need. You've got Vinny, who's a senior. He's obviously going to graduate and go on to probably professional basketball overseas. That would be my guess. I mean, he's that level of player.
If he wants to, I'm sure, yes.
Yeah, and then Cameron Hunter, who is a very talented individual as well, but Cam's a junior. And so you'll get two more years of Cam, one more year of Vinny. There are no more point guards on the roster. They have to be just a tremendously attractive destination for a young point guard. Defending league champions, loaded roster, good bigs, good wings, young bigs and wings. I think a program that's in great shape for a point guard to come in and be the backup point guard as a true freshman and then run the show for 3 years. I think that has to be a very appealing package if you're Coach Richmond and you're recruiting. And the other thing is that a season ago, Jarius Cook came in with tremendous fanfare. They beat Northern Iowa for him, and just wasn't quite there yet as far as being ready to play, but had, you know, kind of already been part of the plans and was not going to redshirt and didn't redshirt. And ended up kind of riding the bench towards the end of the year after losing that red shirt. And then you have Jackson Notek, who got his shirt pulled when they had a couple of injuries and Coach Richmond decided to suspend Tyson Ward for a few games. They needed another body. So Jackson came in and played. And he's a guy that also ended up riding the pine at the end of the year, somebody you might want to take back his red shirt. And redshirting both of those guys this year seemed possible, certainly one of the two, right up until that Jordan Horn transfer, because you start to look at, you know, just how many guys are available, and that kind of becomes a more difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with the 2020 point guard. I mean, Vinny's gone. He's kind of a little bit the heart and soul of that, playing at the point guard. He makes plays late shot clock, which happens more than often in a game. I don't know if you can convert a Jarius Cook to a point guard. I do think the 2020 point guard's going to be key. You're going to need to bring a guy in that's going to fit the culture and be able to be solid. And I know that they're going to work how they need to as far as recruiting for that spot. But you got to think that that's the direction that they're going to go with that. It would be nice if Jarius or Jackson one of them could take a redshirt this year. But I know they're playing teams in Puerto Rico. They played some of the top teams there. I don't know how it compares to Division I college basketball, but they sure showed some signs and development. And I know Coach Richmond was excited with how his team played there and how some of the younger guys are starting to develop. And it's always good to have in-game stuff where they can show their skills and kind of show that development for the coaches. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that point guard spot after this year with Vinny gone. Obviously Cam can fill in, but no guy's going to play 40 minutes in a game. I mean, maybe a couple games here and there, but I don't think Cam's that type of player. It'd be nice to, even have Cam play 20, 25 minutes. And if you can get a true freshman in there that's going to be solid to back him up, that'd be nice too. But I think the wing spots are very good going forward. That point guard spot will be a question mark after this year, but we can talk about that as the year goes on. I'm sure they're gonna find someone that fits the mold.
For sure, and I think that kind of brings us to our next point, that Puerto Rico trip. And what I think that did is you're in a situation now where I think the no-tech conversation's over, or it's close to over as far as his ability to contribute this year. I think he, frankly, could easily overtake Quayle for minutes. He's just so much more gifted offensively. But at the same, I mean, yeah, Dave does love defense, but that Jordan Horn spot is gone, and you might maybe risk losing with today's, you know, way today's culture is, or the way that basketball is, you almost risk losing a guy like Jarius Cook, who is so highly touted in recruiting. If you do sit him for a whole year, with who knows what will be guaranteed to him the following season, you know, Tyson graduates, Jared graduates. I would hope that it would be obvious, but you also can't play 11 guys. It's quite an interesting spot that they've got themselves into, and frankly, it's kind of an enviable spot.
Yeah, I mean, their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot. Sam's going to play the 2-3 spot. Tyrese had a great offseason. I mean, he's kind of solidified, or in my opinion, has that he's going to play some minutes at the 2-3. Tyson's obviously going to play. I mean, he creates matchup problems all over the court. If you put a bigger guy on him, he's going to take him to the perimeter. You put a smaller guy on him, they're going to post him up and take advantage of that. I mean, Rocky's going to play. He's going to play a lot of minutes. I think a big kind of question mark will be that five spot. Is Tyler Witt's going to be ready? Is Odell Wilson going to play some minutes? Are they going to go small and put Rocky at the five? But I think you're right about if you sit a kid after you didn't redshirt him last year and make him sit as a sophomore after he's probably had the whole offseason trying to earn himself some minutes, it's kind of a risky thing to do, especially with the kid that was highly recruited. He obviously wants to find some minutes. And if he's a competitor like you need to be at this level, I don't think any of those two will want a redshirt. Jackson brings an offensive repertoire that's going to be needed, I think. If he can figure it out defensively, I think he's a big guy, to big addition to add to the roster right now. Jarius has proven that he's going to be more comfortable on the wing. The big thing transitioning from that high school level to the college level is the defensive effort, and everything's just a step faster. So if those guys can get comfortable on the defensive end, I think their offensive skills are going to make them going to help them out on and get them some minutes.
For sure. And you're just in a spot where, you know, you start to scratch out that rotation. You're just trying to figure out who's going to sit. You know, the five looks great with Rocky and Witts. Does that mean Odell Wilson has to sit out another year where he's already kind of done his redshirting? The four looks really solid with Sam, you know, playing most of the minutes and Tyree kind of spelling him. They've been going smaller, and so you just have to figure out in today's culture of guys transferring in and out constantly how to field your best team for now and for the future. And boy, I mean, it's a bright one. I think that this roster, especially the guys they have committed beyond this, not only just with Noah and Malik being added, and Malik really, I thought, played well in Puerto Rico as well, based on the statistics and the video clips that were given. It's not like I watched every game, but you just have to be, I think, impressed with the direction, especially after everyone was so kind of on or off the fence as far as whether or not after the Kai Cabela's transfer out and the rough season, whether or not this was the guy, you know, whether or not Richmond could really move this program forward.
Yeah, I mean, their roster, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, you got Vinny, Chris, and Tyson as seniors this year, but I mean, after that, you're a couple, I mean, they got it pretty spread out to where it's kind of a wait your turn type of thing if some guys develop more than the others. But the best thing I think about it, and I talked about it a couple weeks ago, is how awesome are those practices going to be? I mean, you're going to have all your scholarship players that think that they deserve some minutes, and they're going to be competing their butts off every day. It's going to make for great practices, which is going to make everyone better. And I think overall it's going to make the team better. And the thing is, it's not a group of selfish guys. So, I mean, if one guy's doing well, it's not like they're going to be jealous of that. I mean, they're going to keep competing and hopefully do everything for the team. I mean, they seem to have that type of chemistry, and I think that's big for the foreign trip. One thing I talked about with Richmond was, I mean, we took that Canada trip when I was, I think, in my junior year. Lawrence Alexander was a freshman that year. And the big thing about those foreign trips is just meshing those new guys in, and it's not – really about being blowing a team out and winning the games there. It's about your off the court stuff and building team chemistry and coming together as a group. And then the practices and the games, I mean, that's just a plus. I mean, you're playing basketball and competing in the summer when other teams aren't getting that opportunity. So I think that the Puerto Rico trip in that matter was great for this team. You're coming off a tournament appearance. You get to bring some young guys in that are going to help you. And I think it was really good for them.
All right, I appreciate it, Nate. We'll catch you next time.
That sounds good. Thanks.
I want to thank Nate for his time, certainly, and I want to thank you guys for listening. We are going to do our absolute very best to provide you what Ryan and I provided the first year that we were together, and that was consistently two pods a week. That's what we're going to try to do. I promise that's what we're going to try to do. We're going to try and during football season, you know, do kind of a breakdown edition, what happened over the weekend, and then as it gets later on in the week, try and preview that next game. And then when basketball and football kind of collide, or basketball is the king sport, we're still going to try and do two a week, maybe hit some football recruiting topics while we're talking about the hoop squad. But that is definitely going to be the plan moving forward. Thank you also very much for listening, and go Bison.